Bad Christian, or sermons on the seven deadly sins and the different sins against God and our neighbor which flow therefrom, by Father Francis Hunault, translated from the original German edition of Cologne, 1740, by Father J. Allen, D.D., Imprimatur, Martyr, Bishop James D. Ricard, copyright 1887. On those who seek advice from fortune tellers, can be preached on the seventh Sunday after Pentecost, but also on the second Sunday after Advent. But what points you out to see a prophet? St. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. There is no doubt that the Jews had a great opinion of St. John the Baptist, for they went out into the desert to see him, to admire his wonderful mode of life, and to hear his preaching. On one occasion, as we read in the Gospel of St. John, the priests and Levites sent to ask him, "Who art thou? Art thou Elias, or perhaps the Messiah himself?" Still, they did not know exactly what he was. From this, Christ took occasion to explain to them the great sanctity of his precursor, and to show them that it was not without reason that they went out to see a great man. "What went you out to see? A prophet? Yea, I tell you, and more than a prophet. For this is he of whom it is written, 'Behold, I send my angel before thy face, who shall prepare thy way before thee.'" There are still prophets to be found here and there in the world, my dear brethren, to whom some people have recourse in certain circumstances to ask them for help and advice. And these latter might be asked in the words of Christ, "What went you out to see? A prophet?" Yes, but not a holy prophet. A prophet? Yes, but a false prophet, who under the pretext of giving you good advice or helping you, devours your souls like a ravening wolf in sheep's clothing and brings them to hell. It is my purpose today to warn all Christians against those false prophets. To have recourse to false prophets of this kind on any occasion whatever for help or advice is a mortal sin. Therefore, beware all of you of such false prophets, and warn all who are still ignorant in this matter. Such is the whole subject of today's sermon. O Holy Ghost, give strength to my words, and light and understanding to my hearers, that they may see the truth clearly. This we beg of thee, through the intercession of Mary and the holy angels guardian. I repeat then, beware of false prophets. To make an alliance and a contract with the devil, to ask advice and help from him, to say like the wicked people of whom Isaiah speaks, "We have entered into a league with death, and we have made a covenant with hell. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us. For we have placed our hope in lies, and by falsehood we are protected. The devil is our helper in the time of need." What a fearful sin that is. You are shocked, pious Christians, at the bare mention of it, and you refuse to believe that any but idolaters and sorcerers could be guilty of such a crime. And you are not very far wrong. Unhappy heathens, what a miserable state yours was. You erected temples, altars, and statues to the evil spirit, and adored him on bended knee. You could not undertake a journey, or commence a war, or enter a lawsuit, or begin a building, or enter on any important business without first sacrificing to the devil and receiving an answer from him through images of wood and stone as to how and when the affair was to turn out. Unhappy heathens, I repeat, I heartily pity your blindness and stupidity. For you knew not the true God, and therefore tried to make a God for yourselves of the evil one. Endless honor and glory to thee, O Jesus, who hast taught the world better things by thy supernatural light, with the exception of witches and sorcerers, that is, the outcasts of the human race. There is no sect in the Christian world which disgraces itself by bending the knee to Satan. To thee alone, O God, does adoration belong. But have I reason to rejoice thus, after all, even in Christendom, among Catholics, who appear to be good, and very often, too, amongst those who are really good in other respects, and I have heard, too, of particular instances in which it has occurred, but of them I will say nothing. Even amongst those people, thou, O great God, art passed over, and the devil is prayed to for help and assistance. And this is done by those. You must pay attention to every word I say, my dear brethren, so as not to refer my words to individuals whom I do not at all intend to allude to. Who, as I said in the introduction, in order to obtain the cure of certain fevers and diseases, in man or beast, or to recover lost or stolen goods, or to secure the return of people who have escaped or lost their way, or to know whether a certain enterprise is likely to succeed or not, have recourse to certain suspicious men or women, and these latter are well known and are frequently spoken of by name. So little are people ashamed of this sinful practice, and pay them for advice and help. And the man or woman thus consulted is expected to cure the disease, or point out the theft, or save where the lost or stolen property is hidden, or compel the person who has escaped to return, or say whether the undertaking will succeed or not, and that by means that are in themselves superstitious and utterly inadequate, naturally speaking, to produce the effects required. All who, either personally or through others, consult such people in any matter whatever, or ask advice from them, are worshippers of the devil, and are guilty of making a contract with their sworn enemy, the evil spirit, and of seeking help from him. Can anyone doubt that this is a most fearful sin? But, they will say, how can that be? God forbid that we should have anything to do with the devil. It never entered into our heads to be so wicked as to ask the evil spirits for help. We seek help from men on earth, not from the demons in hell, and we nearly always find what we ask. But I ask you in turn, what is the difference when you want a favor between handing in your petition to the prince with your own hand and getting one of his ministers or friends to hand it in for you? Do you not ask a favor from the prince in the latter way, just as in the former? Nay, perhaps you are more likely to obtain your request through the friend of the prince than if you made it yourself in person. The same is to be said of the subject of which we are now treating. The difference is there between calling up the devil yourself in order to ask him to help you, and getting help from his agents and ministers who are sure to help you only by diabolical agency. Do you not seek help from the devil in one way as well as in the other? Let us consider the matter sensibly. Where do the people whom you consult get their knowledge of healing? Who has given to the ciphers and letters that they hand you, to the superstitious devotions that they prescribe, and to other similar means they make use of the power of effecting cures. How do they know the thief who has stolen your money and the place in which he has hidden it? How can they say whether your undertaking is to turn out a success or not? Who gives them the power to bring back people from you know not where? Perhaps they receive private revelations from God and are endowed with a special power of working miracles. But that is not likely to be the case with such people. It is true that God knows all things, that even the most secret recesses of the heart are open to Him, that He sees afar off as clearly as close at hand, that He knows the future as well as the present, and that He has kept to Himself the knowledge of these secrets and hidden things. Therefore, the prophet Isaiah, in order to show the greatness of the true God, whom alone he adored, over the false gods of the heathens and infidels, brings forth this proof. Let them come and tell us all things that are to come. Tell us the former things, what they are. Show us the things that are to come hereafter, and we shall know that ye are gods. There is no doubt that God can communicate to creatures a portion of this knowledge. He can reveal to them hidden and future things. He can give them the grace to work miracles. And He has already bestowed this special grace and knowledge on many saints in the Old and New Testament. In the Old Law, when the Divine Teacher had not as yet appeared on earth, and God was wont to instruct His people by means of men to whom He spoke, and make known His will, there were always certain prophets who were called seers and men of God, of whom the people used to ask advice and help. Come, let us go to the seer, they used to say. Thus, Samuel prophesied to Saul where he would find his father's asses, and gave him also certain signs by which he might know that God had chosen him king of Israel. When thou shalt depart from me this day, thou shalt find two men, etc., and they shall say to thee, the asses are found which thou wantest to seek. And when thou shalt depart from thence and go further on, and shall come to the oak of Tabor, there shall meet thee three men going up to God to Bethel, one carrying three kids, and another three loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. And they will salute thee, and will give thee two loaves, and thou shalt take them at their hands. After that thou shalt come to the hill of God. When therefore these signs shall happen to thee, do whatsoever thy hand shall find, for the Lord is with thee. And everything happened to Saul as Samuel had foretold. In the same way, we read in the fourth book of Kings that Naaman, the general of the king of Syria, had recourse to the prophet Eliseus to be cleansed from leprosy. And Eliseus sent a messenger to him, says the Holy Scripture, saying, go and wash seven times in the Jordan, and thy flesh shall recover health, and thou shalt be clean. But we might ask, how could water and washing in it seven times have the power of curing leprosy? In fact, Naaman himself was disgusted at the cure prescribed for him, and was about to go away. One of his servants persuaded him to do as the prophet had said, and he was completely restored to health. Then he went down and washed in the Jordan seven times, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored, like the flesh of a little child, and he was made clean. Such was the way in which the prophets in those days declared future things and healed the diseases of those who had recourse to them. But they were holy men, who were publicly appointed by God as prophets, seers and advisors for the people. And the latter were told to go to them, and were assured that they would learn from them, with certainty, the divine will, would be instructed in their doubts and helped in their necessities. The ordinary expression used by the prophets when making any announcements was, "Thus saith the Lord." "Thus saith the Lord, so and so will happen." "Thus saith the Lord, so and so shall you do." But who has made prophets of those other people? When has it been revealed? Where is the written promise on the part of God that he will speak by their mouths and make known hidden and future things? How can it be proved that they have received from God the power of working miracles? Where are the signs of extraordinary holiness to prove that God has selected and appointed them to such an office? At all events, neither the prophets of old nor the saints of our times ever asked money for healing the sick by a miracle or for making known hidden and future things. While the contrary is the case with those false prophets who take good care that they are paid for their jugglery. The Holy Scripture says that when Naaman was cured of the leprosy by washing 7 times in the Jordan, he offered to Elias 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold, and humbly begged of the prophet to accept them. And returning to the man of God with all his chains, he came and stood before him and said, "In truth I know there is no other God on all the earth, but only in Israel. I beseech thee, therefore, take a blessing of thy servant." And what answer did Eliseus make him? "As the Lord liveth," he said, "before whom I stand, I will receive none." Nay, because Gehazi, the servant of Eliseus, took some money from Naaman, the prophet punished him by declaring that he should become a leper. The leprosy of Naaman, he said, "shall also stick to thee and to thy seed forever." And he went out from him a leper as white as snow. Such was the way in which the prophets of God acted. Try what those false prophets will do. Offer them $10 and see whether they will accept them or not. You will get very little advice or help from them unless you pay them for it. I will not cry them down, my dear brethren, as sorcerers and dealers in the black art. I leave them to enjoy whatever reputation they have, and that cannot be a very good one, at least amongst sensible people. This only I will say, and no reasonable person will doubt me, that they do not get from God or from his inspiration the knowledge which enables them to find out where the thief is or where the stolen property is hidden and to give help and advice in other circumstances. And therefore, since they cannot get it naturally, it must come from the devil and by his help in virtue of a compact entered into with him, either orally or in writing. And so it is in reality. The devil has lost none of the pride which made him wish to be equal to God. That pride which was the cause of his eternal ruin, and therefore he introduced idolatry into the world, in order that, as sacrifice is offered to the true God, he also might have adorers to offer sacrifice to him. But he cannot have those sacrifices from Christians, and he sees, very much against his will, that they have recourse to God alone, generally speaking, in their trials and necessities. And so he endeavors to get the same honor for himself when he makes use of his agents to disclose hidden and secret things, to foretell the future, and to cure wounds and diseases, so as to induce men to have recourse to him. someone will ask. How can the devil do that? How can he prophesy the future, since God has reserved that knowledge to himself and to those to whom he reveals it? I answer that, according to the teaching of theologians, neither the good angels nor the devils can by their mere natural powers have any knowledge of future things or of the secret thoughts of one's mind. For future events depend either on the free will of God or on that of man. Now, it is impossible to have any certain knowledge of either. The good angels and also the devils may indeed conclude with a certain amount of probability from a man's inclination and the circumstances in which he is, what will be likely to happen to him. But a certain knowledge of it they cannot have, because the man is free and can, and very often does, act against his inclination and in spite of his circumstances. Thus, neither the devil nor even the good angels can know without a special divine revelation whether I am going to a certain house or into certain company this evening, nor do they know whether I am going to travel tomorrow or whether I shall be elected to a certain office or dignity. Therefore, the devil can neither tell me such things with infallible certainty. There are some future events, however, which depend on the natural course of things amongst unreasoning creatures, such as the change in the weather, sunshine, rain, thunderstorms, etc. All these things are the good angels and the devils can foresee naturally. But as Sarez remarks, since God very often changes the course of these things, the devils are often deceived and cannot have a certain infallible knowledge of them. The devil might perceive with some accuracy the number of years I still have to live, for my constitution and general health, the food and drink I use, the air I breathe, and the country I live in. But since he cannot know whether I will change my diet or go into a foreign country, or what dangers I shall have to encounter, or whether I shall be shot or drowned or meet my death by some other accident, since it is impossible for him to find out whether God will not perhaps shorten my life or prolong it, contrary to what might be expected from my constitution and habit of body, therefore he cannot tell me for certain whether I have still a quarter of an hour to live. He can foresee, as a consequence of a change in the weather, a great scarcity or famine, or pestilence, or inundations, earthquakes, etc. But, since all these may be prevented by God, and often are prevented through the prayers of pious people, here again the devil is also often at fault. Hence, when he prophesies any of these things, either immediately or by means of his agent, what he says is mere guesswork. If it turns out true, well and good for him, because it helps him to deceive souls and to seduce them all the easier. To how many has he not promised a long life who died immediately after? How often has he not foretold immediate death to those who live to a ripe old age? Of many examples that are related to prove this, I will content myself with the following. Galeazos, Duke of Milan, who was foretold by one of these false prophets that he would die prematurely. And what, asked the Duke, will be your destiny? Oh, said the other, I will live to be very old. Ah, said the Duke, I see that your art has deceived you considerably on this occasion. You must know that I am in far better profit than you. You will die before me, and I will prove to you that what I say is true. Thereupon he had him strangled. The unhappy fate of Cardanus, a celebrated physician and astrologer, and at the same time a wicked, abandoned man, should deter anyone from allowing himself to be deceived by such people. This Cardanus was dangerously ill. Benedict Ferrarius, a learned and clever man, was doing his best to induce him to repeat and receive the last sacraments, but in vain. The sick man asked for the papers on which he had calculated his destiny according to the stars. "See," he said, "I have foreseen this illness, and I know that it will not be mortal. For in a week's time, I shall take a turn for the better and get well again." Nor would he hear a word of repenting or receiving the sacraments. His prophecy came true in part, but nevertheless, it deceived him completely. For in a week, as he had said, his illness took a turn, but for the worse, not for the better, so that he died unrepentant. Thus he experienced the truth of what St. Augustine had said long before: "No one can promise you another day, unless perhaps an astrologer, but how many are there not to have been deceived by astrologers?" This should also serve as a solitary lesson to those who go to those notorious vagabonds, Egyptians or gypsies, they are called, in order to have their fortunes told from the lines of their hands. What a fearful abuse for Christians to be guilty of, and what lamentable folly. As if a swarthy, vicious woman, who very often knows nothing of God or of His commandments, could foretell different changes of fortune and circumstances, or say whether one is to be long-lived or not. For you must either believe that those people can see the future by natural means in the palm of your hand, and if so, you must be silly indeed, or else you believe that they get their knowledge by divine revelation, in which case you are guilty of presumption and tempting God, or you know that they are helped by the devil, and of course you are guilty of the horrible crime of seeking aid from the evil spirit, or finally, you are so clever that you do not believe a word of what they say, and yet you consult them, thus giving way to a most scandalous and dangerous curiosity. Scandalous, since you encourage the simple-minded in their superstitious practices. Dangerous, because although you say you do not believe, yet if their prophecy happens to turn out true, you will commence to think that perhaps there is something in it, and either through hope or fear, you will allow it to influence your mode of life, and thus the indulgence of a vain curiosity will cause you to descend to the lowest depths of superstition. With regard to lost and stolen things, the thief who took them and the place in which they are hidden, since all these things are visible things, and have been the objects of outward action, there is no doubt that the devil knows all about them, and therefore, if God permits him, he can easily communicate certain knowledge with regard to them. Yet, even in this, he is not always to be trusted, for the father of lies often denounces an innocent person as guilty, either for the purpose of deceiving men or to cause some greater misfortune. Martin Del Rio, in his Euridica, states that there was once a peasant who wrapped up some money he had just received in a piece of fresh hide and laid it on a bench outside the door where he was engaged in doing some work. As soon as he had turned his back, a pig came up and swallowed down the hide with the money. The peasant looked everywhere for his money, but could not find it. "Where can it have gone to?" he said. "There is no one near the house. I must and will find out all about it." So saying, he ran off to a certain woman in the village who had the reputation of knowing more than other people, to ask her what had become of his money. The witch told him that he must wait a little and not dare to follow her. Then she crept into a dark hole, and after some frightful conjuring and incantation, she cried out in a loud voice, "Where is the money that this man has lost?" And a terrible voice answered her, saying, "The man has some pig and has eaten it. But you must his wife take it, so that there may be a shining in the house." The witch was dreaded. The had seen heard everything, and went on. That went on the dark cold. And went home, slaughtered the pig, and found a purse in its tummy. He then accused the witch before the church, who condemned her to be burned alive. See, it is false, but the time that they have recourse to. Notice in suspicious churches to get cured of their diseases, or to recover lost property, or to have their misfortunes told. And what else is that but asking the devil for advice and help? Yet this is done by Christians who have sworn fidelity to Jesus Christ, who worship the one true God, and who have solemnly renounced the devil and all his works in baptism. And it is done in a Christian land, and done without shame, as if there was no harm in it. I could wish to cry out in the ears of all who are guilty of such a crime, what God said by the prophet Elias to King Ochozias, as we read in the fourth book of Kings. The latter had fallen from the window and hurt himself severely, so that he became seriously ill, and he sent his servants to Beelzebub, the false god of Acheron, to know what would be the result of his sickness. And he sent messengers saying to them, "Go, consult Beelzebub, the god of Acheron, whether I shall recover from this my illness." "What," said Elias to him, "is there not a god in Israel that ye go to consult Beelzebub, the god of Acheron? Wherefore, thus saith the Lord, from the bed in which thou art gone up, thou shalt not come down, but thou shalt surely die." What, I say to those Christians, is there no longer a God in the Christian world to whom you can have recourse? Are things come to such a pass that you have to seek help from the powers of hell? Is it to the devil that you now bend the knee, to him that you fly for refuge, from him that you ask help and advice? What a shame and disgrace! What an enormity! Can I believe it to be true? No, I cannot even imagine Christians to be guilty of such a crime if I were not assured that they really commit it. But they say to excuse themselves, "What does it matter to me what the man or woman I consult does, or what art is made use of? I, for my part, protest before God that I wish to have nothing to do with the devil or with superstitious practices. All I want is to recover my lost property, or to get rid of the fever from which I am suffering, or to find out something that interests me very much. I have no other object than that. Besides, I protest that I wish to have nothing to do with the devil." Empty excuse, vain protestation, which does not help you a bit. You may protest a thousand times, if you like, it still remains true that you have dealings with the devil, for you seek help by means that cannot produce the effect required by their own natural virtue, and that therefore must be helped to produce it by diabolical agency. But it is never lawful under any circumstances to have recourse to such means as that. Theologians teach that he who is suffering from an illness caused by witchcraft, as is often the case through divine permission, is not allowed to have recourse to witchcraft or any superstitious means in order to get cured. He should rather suffer 1,000 deaths than seek a cure by such unlawful practices. That is all fine talk, but it does not prevent those people from helping me by their means to get back my lost property or am cured of the fever. Such is the excuse generally brought forward. They help me. Of course they help you, if God allows them, and you get your property back. But it is by diabolical and unlawful means, by using which you commit a great sin and forfeit heaven. Of course they help you, and you recover your health. But through the intervention of the devil, and by incurring the eternal death of your soul, which of these will you choose? Is there not then a God in heaven, I must ask you again, who can help you just as well, or even better? Is there no saint or friend of God through whose intercession you can recover your lost property or regain your health? Is there no church in the world in which you can pray and have recourse to Mary, the Mother of God, and get masses said for your intention? Do you look upon the devil as a better helper, physician, and benefactor than the God of infinite power, wisdom, and goodness, from whom we have the infallible promise, "Ask and you shall receive"? Come and knock at my door, and I will give you everything, provided only that it is good for your soul. Yes, you say again, but I might pray for a long time before being helped so effectually. I have prayed, and got others to pray. I have had masses said, and given candles, and gone on pilgrimages, and called on Saint Anthony and many other saints for help. But what have I gained thereby? My lost property is not yet recovered. My child is still sick. My son, my husband, is still away from me, and I do not know where he is. Well, have patience. I believe that such is really the case with you. But what then? Well, there is nothing else for me to do but to go to those people, and they will help me for a trifling sum. No, do not say that. If you are a good Christian, you must not think of such a thing. If God has not heard your prayer, he knows why. It would not have been for the good of your soul had he given you what you asked. Your child is still sick in spite of all you can do lawfully. Well, at all events, you have done your part. That illness is a greater blessing from God than health would be, so that you must be satisfied with the divine will. You have failed to recover your lost or stolen property. You must attribute your loss to the providence of God, and you must say, like the patient Job, when he was reduced to the driest poverty, "The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." If we have received good things at the hand of God, why should we not receive evil? Why should we not accept trials willingly from the same loving and beneficent hand? If it is good for you, the Lord can recompense you fourfold in other things for the loss you have suffered. You must not, then, be so foolish as to add to your temporal loss the loss of the supreme God by having dealings with the devil. Besides, God can take away from you the property you recover by the help of the devil, or make you suffer a loss 10 times greater in other things. No, you must have recourse to God and appeal to him alone. Such should be your resolution. What I have lost is of great value. That is another excuse they bring forward. I have lost $1,000, Must I let them go without an effort to recover them? If so, how am I to support my children? If I can get them back so easily, why should I hesitate? So easily, you say? Where is your common sense? Is it an easy means of recovering your money to offend God by mortal sin and thus lose your soul? You might make good your loss by stealing the amount of it, but would that be lawful? No matter what you have lost, even if it were the whole world, and you could get it back in that way for a trifling sum, while on the other hand you run the risk of being reduced to beggary if you do not get it back, even then it would be unlawful for you to ask help or advice from the false prophets. Everyone should be at all times and under all circumstances willing to suffer the loss of all he has, not accepting even his honor and good name, his peace and pleasure, and to die a thousand times rather than offend God by mortal sin. What good, then, would it be to you to have everything in the world if you lose God and his friendship? But another will say, I will venture it this once. I can afterwards repent of my sin and confess it. And meanwhile, I shall have recovered my health or my property. And has it come to that with you? Do you think so lightly of a grievous sin because God is so good and merciful that he will forgive you when you have repented of it, confessed it? What a wretched thing for a Christian to do. Go to your false prophets then, if you are determined on it, and ask them to cure you by their juggernauts or to recover your property for you. I tell you on the part of God that you will have neither luck nor grace with your property or health. Who knows, my dear brethren, whether it is not sins of that kind that are the cause of the hard times that are pressing so heavily on all of us now. How many poor people are compelled to lay aside their shame and to hold out their hands to beg for a piece of bread? How many are obliged to pawn what they have on account of the high prices of things in order to purchase food? How many there are even who actually die of hunger and privation? And what else could be expected when people neglect the true God and worship the devil? Go to your false prophets, you superstitious people, and see whether they can give you bread. Ah, good Christian, I conclude with the words with which I began. Beware of false prophets, who, although they seem to benefit you by their help and advice, are in reality ravening wolves that devour your souls. And therefore I beg of you to tell others in town and country what you now hear. There are many simple-minded people who, through ignorance, see no harm in those things, except they have recourse to the powers of hell without shame. If you come across any of them, warn them, and do all you can to induce them to give up their superstition, that this horrible vice may no longer find place in a Christian country. Threaten, if necessary, to denounce them to ecclesiastical authority. Far be it from all of us, my dear brethren, even to think of committing such a crime. We will unanimously ratify and renew the contract we made with God in holy baptism, and will say in the name of all Catholics in this country, I renounce thee, Satan, and all thy works. Away with thee, unhappy spirit. I renounce thee forever. Never will I have the least thing to do with thy agents. If thou wert to offer me the whole world and all its wealth, as thou formerly did to the Savior on the mountain, all these will I give thee, falling down thou wilt adore me. I would say to thee, as he did, Begone, Satan, For it is written, The Lord thy God shalt thou adore, and him only shalt thou serve. This shall be my constant resolution. Greed of gain will sometimes tempt me, and urge me to get back by unlawful means what I have lost. Away, I will say, with everything I have, God is my best, highest, and dearest good. As long as I have him, I am rich enough. Sensuality will whisper to me that it would be a good thing to recover my health. No, I shall answer. Let me be sick and suffer. Let me and everyone belonging to me die, if necessary, as long as I can live for my God. I shall take what care I can of my property and do my best to make up for losses, but by lawful means. I shall take care of my health, but by lawful means. And then, whether I am rich or poor or sick or in good health, it does not matter as long as the will of God is accomplished. Thee alone will I adore, O God. To thee and to thy saints alone will I fly for refuge. Thee alone will I serve, thee alone will I love with my whole heart. If you all unite in making this resolution and in keeping it, for I do not think that there are many here present who are addicted to the vice against which I am speaking, you will profit much by this sermon. May that be the case. Amen.